Hello and welcome to another episode of the Daily Remedy Podcast. Today we have Dr. Miller, who is involved with Physician Just Equity, which is a unique grassroots-based organization that helps advocate for physicians who find themselves in adverse situations. So with that, I'd like to welcome Dr. Miller.
Thank you very much, Jay. Can I call you Jay? You can call me Pringle.
Sure, I think that would work out. Okay. So for the audience who may not be familiar with your organization, can you tell them a little bit about Physician Just Equity and what the mission of the organization is?
Absolutely. So let me just start by saying that we just celebrated our 1 year anniversary on October 5th. That was the date we were incorporated. To get to your question, our mission statement is that we exist to provide support, peer support, to physicians and surgeons in the United States who experience workplace conflicts through education, research, empowerment, and advocacy. We seek to champion a balanced resolution through these workplace conflicts while also facilitating institutional culture change that seeks to optimize patient care.
That are a lot of words that I think may not be familiar with the audience, so I'd like to break that down piece by piece. When you talk about workforce conflict or workplace conflict, can you elaborate that for the audience and perhaps provide an example?
Sure. So there can be a lot of examples, but what I mean by that is when an individual, a physician or a surgeon, speaks out, for example, about a quality issue or a patient advocacy issue. We've seen a number of articles in the press recently just about doctors speaking out about the lack of PPE or vaccination type issues. So some of those doctors have been retaliated against because of their advocacy, because they're advocating for themselves. They might be advocating for other colleagues in the same situation, like not having adequate PPE to protect themselves, or they might be advocating for patients and the rights of patients. And so those are the sorts of things that I would say fall into the umbrella of having a workplace conflict. Basically, you're bringing something to light that your organization or employer doesn't really want to bring out into the light. And therefore, there's a conflict that arises. And sometimes those conflicts are because of values that we're upholding. And sometimes it's a combination of the values we're upholding and the identities that we claim. So these sorts of conflicts tend to happen more so with people who are either women, people who are underrepresented minorities, people who have disabilities or belong to the LGBTQIA+ community. So folks that are a standard of deviation away from the white male majority.
Interesting. There's quite a few interesting points you had mentioned in regards to patient advocacy or policy advocacy. Before we jump into that, I want to get back to your original mission statement in which you refer to a balanced resolution. And I think that kind of ties into what you had just mentioned as well. Can you elaborate upon the term balanced resolution?
Yeah, and I realize I didn't answer sort of part of your previous question about giving an example, but maybe we can get back to that. Sure. So what I mean by championing a balanced resolution is that what we see in the work that we're doing with PJE is that individual clinicians, physicians, and surgeons lose in these conflicts. And they don't just lose a little bit, they lose a lot. And what I mean by that is that they lose their reputation, they lose their career opportunities, they lose their livelihoods. And we both know about a case in which, you know, we're witnessing that. And so what we'd like to do is help to facilitate and mediate a balanced resolution where it may be that the conflict gets resolved in a win-win situation. Each party may not get exactly what they want in the resolution, but no party loses everything. And right now, physicians and surgeons are really getting squashed like bugs in these conflicts. And it doesn't appear that there's any other national organization that is advocating for them in these situations. They're left to their own devices. They're isolated and not having resources enough to be able to sort of get out of these conflicts whole, or at least, you know, without their livelihoods being compromised.
Certainly, no organization really at the individual physician and surgeon level like PJE is working towards. To play devil's advocate, let me use a term, whistleblower. Oftentimes in the medical community, a physician or surgeon who is a whistleblower undergoes a lot of stigmatization within the healthcare institutions that they work in, often to the detriment of the physician or surgeon, as you alluded to. But for those who are not acquainted with the intricacies of healthcare, it's often asked, well, if they're right, why do they suffer? Why do they incur retaliation? For those who may not understand the nuances of these particular disparities that physicians and surgeons experience, can you go into that and perhaps lend that as an example?
Yeah, that's heavy. And I think absolutely what you said is true, is that it doesn't make sense for the person who's in the right to be retaliated against, and for the system, the structure, the leadership to not come on board and recognize that a whistleblower is actually advocating for the right thing. But what happens is that this imbalance of power and the agendas that are put forth by individual clinicians trying to advocate for an individual patient's rights and can conflict with the agendas of organizations and employers. And unfortunately, we see this sometimes as it relates to economics. So if a physician is advocating for something that the patient wants that isn't economically advantageous for the organization, there can be a conflict there. Similarly, it's true that organizations don't want to reveal things that are illegal. And so they may just want to cover up what it is that they've condoned or what has happened on their watch. They've been complicit about something that is illegal and certainly unethical. So it's easier to make it go away and in the process make the doctor go away instead of dealing with the problem.
That's an interesting point, because it talks a lot about infrastructural malaise that we see in the healthcare world that is decidedly not medical. When you discussed PJE, you talk about upholding values, identities, and you talk now about economically advantageous moves that may be detrimental to traditional medicine. How much of your efforts and your initiatives since you started have proven to be not medical in the traditional sense, but social outside of what people would believe to be traditionally medical issues?
So let me kind of have you restate that a little bit differently, because my mind is going in so many different directions. If you could focus me a little bit more on what you're asking.
Certainly. Healthcare equity is redefining how we look at healthcare. Traditionally, the issues you are dealing with may not be what most people understand medicine to be. So as part of your advocacy, redefining what healthcare means for the modern physician or surgeon, or do you find that these issues you're addressing have been longstanding issues that now are coming to arise because of what you are doing?
Yeah, okay, thank you for that. So I would say these are longstanding structural issues that were many of us aware of, whether it be structural sexism or racism or bias or the condoning of microaggressions and other types of abuses towards people that are more vulnerable. So these are situations in which certain vulnerable classes tend to be punished for things that wouldn't ordinarily be punishable offenses. And so the equity piece is related because it's clear in a business world, and it's becoming more documented in the healthcare world, that we need a diverse workforce in order to effectively treat our diverse population in the United States, just sort of narrowing it down to this country. And when individuals who represent diversity are pushed out of the workforce, we're undermining our ability to really tackle these health inequities that we're acknowledging, that we're witnessing, especially during the COVID pandemic. So we're not really working with the data that we have to support having a workforce that can combat these inequities that we've been revealing.
I think that is a great point that I just like to repeat. A diverse physician and surgeon workforce leads to better overall patient outcomes for the population. For those who may have an antiquated view that the physician or the surgeon must be hard charging, aggressive, and part of the culture allows for microaggressions, what would you say to those people who have that belief?
They're wrong. I think there's plenty of data to suggest that the way that we treat each other in the workplace, whether that's as coworkers or as clinicians, physicians and surgeons to patients, that people are sensitive to what's valuable to them, their own sense of dignity and respect. And if we can't get it together as a profession to respect one another in a genuine sense, that has a trickle-down effect to the way that patients receive their care and also the way patients feel when they're receiving care. I mean, we have many, many stories of underrepresented groups of people getting care from majority groups who feel marginalized and dismissed. So it really takes all of us to educate each other and to support each other in the work that we're doing so that people don't feel that. We shouldn't want people to enter into their healthcare systems feeling like they're not being heard. And certainly that's true for the physicians and surgeons working in the healthcare system. They similarly should not feel like they're not being heard.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Health equity within the physician community, physicians and surgeons, translates to better patient care. Can you provide an example or a recent success of PJE that can help the audience better understand this?
Well, I'm not sure that I can relate it to PJE other than, you know, our mission to get the word out that this is very critical for population health. I can say that in terms of literature that I've read that supports that argument, certainly if you look at the British Medical Journal article about women surgeons and their outcomes, they have better outcomes in the population of surgeons that they looked at. We have a similar article in the United States. I can't remember what journal it was published in that showed that women who are hospitalists have lower readmission rates and have better outcomes. There was a very interesting article that was published in a cardiology journal that looked at cardiologists who were men, their outcomes, cardiologists that were women, and their outcomes as it related to women patients. So women cardiologists had better outcomes with their women patients than the male cardiologists did with their women patients, but men who worked with women had better outcomes with the women that they were treating in their practice. And so that sort of trickle-down effect and what can be learned, better behaviors and cultural sensitivities when you have a diverse workforce, that messaging and that, I would say, you know, that outcome is something that's been reproducible across the medical literature. And certainly if you have studies that demonstrate that women have better outcomes and women are being pushed out of the workforce, we should ask ourselves the question, you know, how can we allow that to happen? Part of the reason that women have better outcomes is that women have better communication skills in general. They listen to their patients more. They follow evidence-based guidelines more. They don't act as cowgirls as much as men in practice. So there have also been reasons delineated as to why women have better outcomes in treating patients in clinical practice.
Certainly the studies have been repeated. And I think the most important word in your response was the phrase reproducible. Because I think what is lost in a lot of people unfamiliar with this field is correlating social behaviors with traditional medical outcomes, oftentimes people will say that those are just statistical noises, that they don't actually represent meaningful policy. What would you say to those people who don't understand health equity at the level that you're looking at it?
Well, I'd say that they're just not looking at the evidence or the data, and maybe it's not important to them. And I think that we can apply that argument to a lot of different social constructs. I mean, certainly, I don't want to get off on a tangent, but you know, we can look at the people who say that vaccines don't reduce the rate of death for people who contract COVID-19. I mean, so I think that there are people who are willing to heed the evidence and other people who have their belief systems that won't allow them to really digest and seriously consider what we know. I mean, there are still many people out there, as you're suggesting, who disprove that there's inequity, gender inequity, for example, within the medical profession. Well, pay inequity has been proven time and time again. Promotional inequity has been proven time and time again. So at some point, we just have to sort of try to gain the ear of people who are more able to be persuaded instead of, you know, the people who probably will never be persuaded.
Do you see that advocacy, that raising of awareness, as part of PJE's mission?
Absolutely, yeah. And I would say that, you know, through hearing people's stories and bringing those stories into the light will potentially help people understand. Because I think the other important thing to point out is that the general public, I think, sees physicians and surgeons as a group as being highly privileged, well-compensated people. And I think that's true. I can't argue with that, but I would say that within our culture, just like within our American living culture, there are inequities that play out within the profession. And that's what we're trying to address. And we're trying to show people that some individuals get a really bad, find themselves in really bad situations that it's very hard to recover from, and they've done all the right things and they haven't done anything wrong, but because of timing and circumstance and being an upstanding individual, they end up in really bad situations, and these are their lives, and we've invested a lot in their lives in terms of their medical training and their residency fellowship training, and every loss of an individual from the profession who's a talented, dedicated, upstanding individual is a very big loss that we should all be concerned about.
Certainly. I think that the physician and surgeon community, while the perceptions may be one thing, the internal stresses that we experience as a profession are unique to us and should have a voice that's familiar with those unique stresses. For PJE now reaching a one-year milestone, it has a lot of room for growth and a lot of potential to achieve that growth. Where do you see PJE in 5 years and in 10 years and the impact that it'll have on the medical community?
Yeah, that's a wonderful thing to think about. So I think the first thing I would say to that is that I would like for us to continue to have the impact that we've had in individual people's lives. So we've had about 32 people that have asked us for our peer support service. It's been 100% true that everyone who's come through our peer support service has valued that and felt very refreshed and invigorated by being in the company of people who have experienced similar things and can impart on them our collective wisdom. So empowering them to stay in the field, empowering them with strategies that they can use to try to get a balanced resolution, it's been remarkable to watch. So at the individual level, I think that we just want to continue to grow that service to scale. And as the mission statement says, you know, we're hoping that through this advocacy effort that we're putting forward, we can change the culture within the employers so that people aren't targeted. And so that if there's disagreements about things, they can be talked out in a civil, respectful way, that lawsuits don't need to be filed, that people don't need to be fired, that we can come to some balanced resolution. We will have disagreements. We will have different agendas, but that doesn't mean that somebody's career doesn't matter. And I think that if we can touch a number of people on a personal level to introduce a different way of doing things when there's a conflict, hopefully that will catch on, because all of the structural systemic things that I've been aware of just have not changed the needle in terms of how leadership at organizations deal with clinicians. Clinicians are dispensable. We can just replace you with somebody else. Well, no, that's not always true. And even if it were true, it's not fair to the person who's in the position. So that's the other thing. And then I think the third thing, and one of our pillars, is education and research. So we just had a webinar on the 19th that was entitled Workplace Conflicts in the Corporate Medical Playbook, How to Safeguard Your Career. That is available on Vimeo, but we'd like to have other webinars to empower people to protect themselves so that they are not lame ducks, and so that they can address workplace conflicts from a position of offense instead of playing defense, because so many of us think that if we're doing all the right things, this fate won't come to us. But that's not what we're finding. We're finding that the people who are having problems are the high performing, very ethical, very people who have high standards. And those are the people that we want in the workforce, not the people that we don't want in the workforce. And then the research piece is coming because we're collecting quantitative, de-identified quantitative and qualitative data. And since we've sort of reached our initial benchmark of 25 peers, we're working on our first publication to get the word out about what we're doing and what we're learning. And I think you wanted to get into this a little bit later, but what we're learning is that government agencies are being used as weapons against clinicians. And that's a really scary proposition. So when I say that, I'm referring to the Department of Justice, I'm referring to the National Practitioner Data Bank. Those are, you know, systems that we think of as being fair and just systems. And the NPDB, for example, was set up to protect the public from unsafe doctors. But what happens when you have a safe doctor who's reported out of malice and they've lost their career as a result of that?
Yeah, certainly these are major issues that I think PJE is unique in heading up. What I find extremely invigorating about your organization is the emphasis on the individual. When you talked about your growth to scale, when you talked about where you want the organization to move, you always emphasize the individual. And inherent in what you're emphasizing, the individual, is the contrast of the system, systemic injustices, as you had mentioned, government agencies being used as weapons against individual physicians. Can you elaborate more on this dichotomy between the individual physician and these systemic injustices and what PJE can do for the individuals?
Yeah. So, I mean, your point is really well taken. I think that as much as we hate to think about it, physicians have become just kind of widgets, cogs in the wheel. You know, we don't have personal identities. We fill a call schedule gap. We, you know, fill a clinic gap. We don't have the same sort of autonomy and authority that we used to have. And I think there are lots of reasons for that. But we are all individuals, and we've worked really hard to get to where we are in our careers. And so I think that the investment has to continue to be able to support and nourish those careers. And so that's where PJE is coming in. You know, when somebody is in duress over some sort of a conflict, and I know that that's a general word, I mean, the conflicts generally tend to boil down to discrimination and harassment and retaliation. Those are the trifecta types of harms that we're seeing peers experiencing. So I think that in order to bolster up the workforce, we need to sort of form in some ways a version of a union that allows us some support and infrastructure for maintaining our values and our autonomy. And I think I lost a little bit of the other part of your question. If you could also maybe just restate the piece that I didn't address.
Sure. What I want to really tease out is how individuals can use PJE to stand up against systemic injustices. You had mentioned government agencies being used as weapons, and that's effectively how we first got introduced to one another. I want to talk a little bit more about your views on those issues and your views from a PJE standpoint, but also from an individual standpoint as a physician. What are you seeing and what gives you concern?
Well, okay, so the first piece is how can individuals use PJE? And so the answer to that question is, number one, they can sign up to utilize our peer support service. Our peer support service allows us to delineate what it is that would be the most actionable item for that individual to be able to understand and combat whatever the injustice is that they're experiencing. So if it happens to be, for example, that something has gone haywire with the NPDB, that's one thing. If something has gone haywire with their institution because, for example, they were subjected to a random drug testing mandate, which was illegal, that's one thing. If somebody was reported to the Department of Justice because they were just trying to get paid for insurance claims and the insurance company decided they didn't want to pay, you know, that's another thing. So each of the people that we support has a different set of needs and injustices that are happening to them. And it's really kind of ranging a spectrum that, for, in all honesty, I never would have really imagined, you know, just how deep these things go. I mean, we're hearing some of the worst cases that are probably out there amongst our peers. So support through the PJE peer support service then kind of gets elaborated to what each individual person's needs are. So we are taking our advocacy outward, meaning that we write letters, we're creating websites, we're staging protests, we're thinking about initiating petitions. We need to shine the light on these things so that the greater community sees what's happening to individual doctors. And like what has been said on one of the other radio shows that you and I are both aware of, is that if it can happen to this person, what's stopping it from happening to you? I mean, these things are being allowed to happen and we need to shine the light on them so it's not something that gets repeated and impacts many of us.
Certainly, there are quite a few physicians, more than either one of us would like to admit, that need help. But on the other side, there are a lot of physicians who are in a position to help. What have you seen in terms of other physicians providing support and helping PJE and the members affected in the peer support group from in order to get the support that they need?
Well, I mean, one thing that I would say is that it takes a tremendous amount of courage for a physician to admit that they need help and to submit themselves in all of that vulnerability during a time of distress and duress to meet with strangers. And so I give all of the peers that we've supported a tremendous amount of accolades that they put their trust in us. And, you know, we've gotten nothing but positive feedback about that. So I think that the nature of who we are as clinicians prevents us from networking often and getting the support that we need, because the mantra is we just have to suck it up and we just have to be self-sufficient and innovative in our own right and solve our own problems. But I think that's not always possible. But what's been very illuminating to me, and also significantly inspirational to me is having people kind of come out of the woodwork and contact me and say, you know, I experienced stuff like this and I don't want this to happen to anybody else. And what can I do? I want to do something. I want to pay it forward. I want to be part of this movement. This is so important. They've said things like what you've said, which is, I don't know if any other organization is doing anything like this. This is really unique. So it's sort of a two-way street between getting people to present to us so that we can help them, but also the overwhelming amount of support that we've had of people wanting to join the movement and know that these things are happening and they don't want to be silent anymore. And they didn't have the kind of support that PJE is providing when it was their turn to go through it. And, you know, they want to be there for other people so they don't experience the same sorts of injustices.
Certainly. For those who are listening and maybe interested in getting involved with PJE and supporting your organization, can you let us know how we can get a hold of you?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a website. It's www.physicianjustequity.org. We also can be followed on the social media platforms at Equity Docs. You can get to our website through Twitter at Equity Docs. You can contact me through the email founder.physicianjustequity@gmail.com. There's also a contact us page on our website. It'll go to the same email. And if you are so inclined to donate finances to the organization, we have a donate page on our website. And I can certainly provide you with the link to the donate page if you have some sort of after notes or something that you're going to publish.
Certainly. And I will include the website URL and your direct information for anybody interested on the Daily Remedy website itself. Last question before we let you go. For those who are listening and have been affected and have faced certain injustices, but may be afraid to reach out, what would you say to that person to encourage them to reap the benefits of what PJE can offer?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think one thing I would say up front is don't be ashamed, because the chances of this being about you are very low. Like I said earlier, you know, the problems exist at the institutional leadership level, and the people who are suffering with these sorts of injustices generally haven't done anything wrong. And I think that the shame really keeps people from coming forward. So to try to defray as much of that feeling of shame and internalization that you've done something wrong is really important. There are so many other people that have been in the same or similar situations that it isn't necessary for an individual to reinvent the wheel in this situation. And so one of the phrases that we have is we like to impart our collective wisdom. And that's really what we do in this peer support team meetings that we have. The peer will meet with 4 to 6 people. They've each had their own experiences. They've learned lessons along the way. They don't want individuals to have to start from scratch. You know, let's just kind of catapult to some solutions that have been tried and true. And so there's no reason to go it alone. And in fact, often I think people feel better if they're working in a team to get something done. And that may not be our nature as physicians, because we sort of start out competitive and we continue through our careers trying to really set ourselves apart and be distinguished. But I think in this space, we just have to recognize that there is value in numbers, and we can learn from people who have experienced similar things. And that puts us at a great advantage. And I have to emphasize again that the outtake information that we've gotten from people who have experienced the peer support service has been nothing but positive. They've felt comfortable. They haven't felt threatened. They've trusted us. They've felt heard and affirmed. And they've left with an empowerment that they didn't have before. A lot of people just feel like they don't know what to do, but our sessions allow them to get focused on action items. And of course, being physicians, we want to see results, right? So they feel so much better knowing that they have a plan and that there might be some positive outcome at the end of that plan.
Certainly, and the positive outcome is certainly welcome for everybody. It's good for the patients and it's good for the physician and surgeon community. So with that, Dr. Pringle-Miller, I feel it's important to say the full name to give the respect that you deserve. I want to thank you so much for coming on this podcast. Thank you so much for what you're doing, advocating for the individual physician and surgeon. It is much needed, and I would recommend anybody who is considering participating with PJE, either seeking the support or providing the support, to please reach out and get a hold of Dr. Miller.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of your podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.